from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, write-in candidates. Every election, some voters skip the names on the ballot and choose someone entirely different, and some candidates are actively seeking a write-in. But what happens to those votes, and can write-in candidates actually win? We'll talk with a political communication expert about the power and the limits of write-ins. We're continuing our local election coverage with a look at the race for Town of Warsing Supervisor. Democratic Town Councilman Joseph Steckler is challenging incumbent Terry Houck, calling for new ideas and stronger local partnerships. Radio Chatskill speaks with Steckler about his vision. And River Vibes hits the Cooperage this Sunday with Connor Garvey and Shanna in a dress. We'll speak to both of them. And local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. After the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Korva Coleman. This is day 34 of the federal government shutdown. Federal food assistance has been halted. Today's the deadline for the Trump administration to respond to two federal judges. They're telling the administration to use contingency money in the U.S. Agriculture Department to fund the food assistance programs. Separately over the weekend, people who get health insurance through the Affordable Care Act started to get a look at their premiums for next year. Brianna Vasquez of California has sticker shock.
On the policy that I have now, it's just me and my two kids, and we currently pay $282 and some change. And I just logged on this past week, and I was finally able to see what the premiums are going to go up to. And if we keep the same plan, it'll go up to $1,003 a month for just health insurance.
Congressional Democrats are insisting Republicans restore money cut from federal health programs before they'll agree to reopen the government. Political canvassers in California spent the weekend talking to voters ahead of tomorrow's election. Just one question is on the California ballot, whether to redraw congressional maps in the state to benefit Democrats. From member station KVCR, Madison Aument has more.
Proposition 50 is Governor Gavin Newsom's response to Texas's redistricting plan, prompted by President Trump to add five Republican House seats. In Riverside County, one of the districts that would be redrawn in California, members of the local Democratic Party, like Michelle Singleton, were out Sunday to drum up last-minute support and educate voters.
We don't want anything to interfere with people feeling like they can exercise their right to vote.
Singleton says many voters tell her they worry Department of Justice election monitors will interfere with voting. The DOJ plans to send monitors to Riverside County, but did not respond to a request for comment. For NPR News, I'm Madison Aument in Riverside.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as investors weigh a proposed merger that would put Tylenol and Kleenex in the same corporate shopping basket. NPR's Scott Horsley reports the Dow Jones Industrial Average slipped about 160 points in early trading.
Kleenex maker Kimberly-Clark is offering to buy Tylenol's parent company in a deal valued at nearly $49 billion. Tylenol maker Kenvue also sells Band-Aids, and the company could use one. Its stock has suffered in recent weeks after unfounded claims from President Trump and his health secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., about the pain reliever's safety. Kenvue was spun off from the giant health conglomerate Johnson & Johnson 2 years ago. Oil producers are holding a summit meeting in Abu Dhabi as OPEC and its allies decide to pause production increases plan for next year. Retail gasoline prices in the U.S. have fallen to just a few pennies above the $3 a gallon mark. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
Stocks remain mixed on Wall Street. The Dow Jones Industrials are down 170 points. The NASDAQ is up 130. This is NPR. A global hunger monitoring group says famine conditions have been confirmed in parts of Sudan for the second time in just over a year. The Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, says they have been identified in El Fasher and Kadugli. El Fasher has been under siege for the last year and a half by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces. The blockade has cut off food and other supplies from getting into the area. Tanzania's president has been sworn in today for a second term. She was declared the winner of disputed elections held last week. As Michael Koloki reports, the East African nation has witnessed a series of protests.
Samia Suluhu Hassan was sworn into office during a ceremony at a military base in the country's capital, Dodoma. Over the weekend, Tanzania's National Electoral Commission announced that Suluhu garnered nearly 98% of the votes cast in the presidential race. In a statement, the country's main opposition party, Chadema, had earlier said that it strongly rejected the election results, claiming that the electoral process had been flawed. During and after the polls, protests were witnessed in various cities and towns across the country. Demonstrators denounced the disqualification of two main opposition leaders from the presidential race. The United Nations has said that credible reports indicate that at least 10 people have been killed since the start of the protest. For NPR News, I'm Michael Kaloki in Nairobi.
The Los Angeles Dodgers will hold their World Series celebration parade in just a few hours. The Dodgers defeated the Toronto Blue Jays over the weekend. They claim the World Series title for the second year in a row. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Imaginable Futures, funding programs in the U.S. with the goal of ensuring young children and their parents get the education they need to thrive. Learn more at imaginablefutures.com. This is NPR.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. As Election Day approaches tomorrow, some voters may be thinking beyond the names printed on their ballots. Write-in candidates, those names must be physically written in by voters. They've shaped close races in the past and could play a role again this year. To help us understand how write-in campaigns work, what challenges they face, and why they sometimes succeed, we're joined by Jacob Neuheisel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Buffalo and an expert on political communication and elections. Professor Neuheisel, welcome.
Thanks for having me on the program.
So I've been driving around my area here in Sullivan County, and I've seen a few signs out there, write in this particular candidate. What is exactly a write-in candidate, and how does write-in voting work?
So a write-in candidate is anyone who, you know, declares that even though they are not printed on the ballot, that they're going to contest the office anyways. And historically, we think of them sometimes as protest votes. Somebody doesn't like their options, and in most places, they're not going to have a none of the above option on the ballot. So they just write in a friend, a neighbor. Mickey Mouse isn't all that unusual, but occasionally you'll have, you know, very well financed and very well run write in campaigns for people who eventually go on to win the election. So it's rare. But write-ins do win.
And you mentioned, you know, the funny Mickey Mouse or sometimes other characters or, you know, just sort of protest votes. But there are some, especially this election season, it seems, more organized campaigns for write-ins, particularly among folks who may have lost in the primary who are still going for it, so to speak. You mentioned some of those folks can win. Under what circumstances do you think a write-in campaign can actually be competitive?
So we actually have a recent example here in New York State, closer to me in Buffalo, where a mayoral candidate lost the primary, contested the election as an independent, and ends up winning in a write-in campaign because he was not legally allowed to be on the ballot as an independent. So that's a recent example, but he had a lot of financing behind his campaign. He had a lot of money, a lot of airtime. And so all of those resources coupled with the fact that he had already served four terms as mayor really helped him out in that particular campaign. He's not alone in winning that, but those tend to be the kinds of candidates we see. They're already established people. Maybe they've held office before, and they're trafficking in the fact that they've got a lot of name recognition and a lot of resources.
From a communication standpoint, how does a write-in candidate overcome the fact that their name isn't on the ballot?
It's really, really hard. You have to come up with a clever, you know, slogans. A couple of the campaigns I'm recalling, they enlisted people who would have been very well recognized. Back in, I believe, 2006 in Ohio, there was a write-in campaign for a congressional candidate. They enlisted the then very popular gubernatorial candidate to appear on the literature with the candidate who was running the write-in campaign. Locally, it turns out that the candidate for Buffalo mayor, his name was Byron Brown, so it just kind of rolls off the tongue to say, write down Byron Brown. So they have clever ways of doing that. And another way that they overcome the communication hurdle, at least in New York, it's possible to pre-make stamps rubber stamps for people to use in the voting booth. And that's what the campaign locally for mayor did.
Oh, wow. That's allowed?
That is allowed. You can use a rubber stamp to put the name in the box. You're not allowed to use a sticker because they gum up the machines. But you are allowed to actually distribute stamps. That was, a challenge to it here, but it was ultimately allowed.
Wow. New York and then Pennsylvania also in our listening area allow write-in candidates. Some states, though, regulate it differently. There are different variations. But do you think just having this choice a marker of our democracy is strengthening us, or do you think that write-in candidates somehow risk some confusion and perhaps even some wasted votes?
That's a really good question. There almost certainly will be people whose votes are not counted because they were confused about the process and they were not able to engage properly in a write-in vote. I don't know the rules in Pennsylvania. I lived there at one point, but with respect to New York, you have to both bubble in the write-in circle and write in, legibly so, the name. And so if you misspell the name, if you write outside the lines, you risk your vote not being counted. So that's a negative from a perspective of every vote being counted. But on the positive front, not a lot of places have a way to level some kind of protest vote. Actually, Nevada does. They have a none of the above on the ballot. But for the rest of us and the rest of the country, write-ins are the closest we can get to participating, but also showcasing that we don't like the options in front of us.
Looking ahead, do you see policy changes coming that could make write-in voting easier or perhaps even limit it?
That's a really good question. I think for the most part, the major parties don't really care about the practice. It's not something that really bothers them because, again, in most cases, it's something where it's a few scattered votes here and there, and it's not really a big deal. If it got to be something where independent candidates were continually contesting as write-ins and were having even more success than they do now, yeah, I think that's something that they could look into to curbing the practice of. And a lot of states across the nation, they have what are called sore loser laws, where if you run for office as somebody from a major party and you end up losing the primary, you're not actually allowed to contest in any other way. New York does not have a sore loser law on the books, as far as I'm concerned, or can tell. But if write-ins became more of a big deal, that's certainly something the parties would look into curtailing.
Well, somehow related to that, before we go, given your expertise in elections, I want to ask you about the New York mayoral race, where there was a loser in the Democratic primary, but is now running as an independent, as well as another candidate. What's your take on the New York City mayoral race?
I think that that's a reason why a lot of states do have sore loser laws. The party doesn't really like to see challenges to its ability to, be the gatekeepers to who gets to run under their label. And the fact that you have two Democrats, albeit one, contesting as an independent up there, it dilutes the brand. It makes things more confusing and difficult for voters as far as the parties are concerned. So, yeah, that usually tends to be the impetus for those kinds of laws around the country.
That's Jacob Neuheisel, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Buffalo, an expert on political communication and elections. Professor, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break, and our local election coverage continues with one of the candidates running for supervisor in the town of Warsaw. This is Radio Chatsko.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got Jungle Jazz by Xavier Cugat and Modesto Duran. Steve Allen plays hi-fi music for influentials. And Mamie Eisenhower's favorite band, The Three Sons. I'm Daryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
Hey, it's Jason Dole letting you know how you can help nourish our neighbors. More families are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are stepping up, but they need help. You can donate non-perishable food, personal care items, or baby supplies, or volunteer to assist with distribution. It can make a real difference. Learn more at WJFFradio.org to help make sure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno.
The race for Town of Warsing supervisor is drawing attention this year as longtime supervisor Terry Houck seeks another term in office. His challenger, Democratic Town Councilman Joseph Steckler, says it's time for new ideas and renewed energy to tackle housing, economic development, and quality of life issues in the community. Radio Catskills' Patricio Rubio sat down with Steckler to talk about his vision for Warsing's future, what inspired him to run, and how he plans to bring collaboration and fresh leadership to the town.
The race for town supervisor in Warsing is shaping up to be one to watch this year. Incumbent Republican conservative Terry Houck is seeking a third term, and he's being challenged by the Democratic town councilman Joseph Steckler, who says it's time for new energy and creative solutions to tackle housing economic challenges in the towns. Welcome to the studio, Joseph.
Thank you for having me, Patricia. I appreciate you.
So, you know, you served on the town board since 2023, right? And what made you decide to take the next step and run for town supervisor this year?
I'm involved in a couple of different committees and organizations, as well as in real estate and on the village planning board. And when I was elected into office for the town board, I realized over the past 2 years that my reach could only go so far given the different hats I wear, and obviously not having the full resources of the supervisor's office limited my ability to expand my reach for a broader impact in our area. And spending the past 2 years, I realized that there's various departments that, you know, obviously need oversight and day-to-day management, as well as being a voting board member where I can have the conversations with our county officials, with our local residents, with the village, with neighboring towns of what's working, what's not, and why. So we can put our best foot forward and make Town of Warsing a better version than it is right now.
You grew up in Warsing. You moved out to the west for a little bit, but you came back. You know, what have you seen has changed most in the community and what hasn't changed enough?
Yeah, so I graduated Ellenville, lived there, moved away, basically right at a couple of years after high school because I just didn't see an opportunity for me to sustain a life with a good income, good paying job, and retirement one day. And, you know, this was in 2008 when, unfortunately, a combination of Channel Master Charade closed in Ellenville, the Neverly Hotel, you know, that they were all but out of business. And we essentially lost over 2,000 jobs in about 7 or 8 years. And, you know, I decided to move elsewhere and where opportunity was. So fast forward, 2019, I moved back. And during the time away, I was able to see different cultures, different lifestyles, different ways of life, meet people who were from around the world. And it definitely eye-opening to experience that, to see other people with, again, what's working, what's not, and why. And that statement really has an impact on me, and I carry on to today. So when I moved back home, it was a lot of the same of the old where, you know, a lot of my friends moved away, and rightfully so. They were not able to sustain a successful lifestyle for them or raise a family without two or three jobs and without, you know, sharing a house, sharing space with people to pay for the bills. You know, the biggest change I have seen really is when the pandemic hit, being about an hour and a half north of the city. We were very attractive for people, remote workers, who were able to still get in the city when they needed to for meetings, trains about a half hour away in Middletown, and, you know, take advantage of, you know, our beautiful area, our amenities from the mountains to the hiking trails, reservoirs. You know, we definitely have a lot to offer people who seek that lifestyle, but are still accessible to the city if needed.
The landscape of the Catskills has changed since the pandemic. A lot of folks coming up here and finding home in the beauty that we have here. You mentioned working with the county and state partners to bring in, you know, grants and funding into Warsing. What kinds of programs or partnerships do you envision pursuing first?
There's one specifically that I'm a big fan of, and it's the Ulster County's Housing Smart Initiatives. And what that is, it's a series of initiatives that offer different attractive features to developers, current owners, to either invest in their property, to sell their property, or help the people who are currently living there. And a couple of which I'll go over quickly and then dive into my favorite. One of which is short-term rental law we have in place. ADUs, accessory dwelling units, we already have in place. I'm a big fan of them because really three reasons. One, it gives the homeowner who might be struggling, whether they're on fixed income or life, the cost of living has surpassed their income. They give them a chance to offset that income with the accessory dwelling unit. And for the, you know, the renter who are struggling for a place to live, maybe keep a roof over their children's heads or their spouse heads or their heads, they can find a place that they can afford. And also with the improvements and building permits, that's the proper way to raise taxes and assess. So that's one thing I'm very sensitive of is finding out ways to properly give people value in their homes and to, you know, to expand our tax base. The last one, there is a series of, it's the Rehab Initiative, and it's a series of improvements that they the homeowner can apply for and be eligible for, whether that's winterization, new windows, roof. You can get your mechanicals upgraded or at least money to offset. So again, I instantly think about our seniors out there or people on fixed incomes who want that, you know, that those new windows. So it's not as draft and, you know, they don't go through as much oil or, you know, updated modernization, but can't afford it. This will give them a fighting chance.
Yeah. You have a background, like you mentioned, in real estate currently. How do you balance development and growth? And in a town like Wolsing, or because, you know, there's a boom going in housing in some parts of Ulster County. How can you, you know, balance that development and growth and still protect, you know, the character of the town and affordability of housing?
I think so what limited municipality experience they might have, I make up for with a combination of real estate and planning. And in my opinion, understanding how business works, understanding planning and zoning are critical pieces to elected officials and decision makers. You need to have an idea of what your plan looks like, what your area has looked like, what you want it to look like, and what you don't want it to look like. You know, there's a saying I like to tell people, you know, who don't quite embrace planning as much as I hope they would, is you need to plan your area before it's planned for you. And, you know, with the town of Wolsing, we have, you know, numerous hamlets with different layouts, whether that's proximity to a highway or proximity to a trail. I don't know if there's there isn't a one size shoe fits all plan when it comes to housing in different areas. I do believe there are opportunities and also, you know, working with the village of Ellenville on what makes sense because, you know, the Ellenville is, you know, the central location, the hub for the town of Wolsing. So, you know, it's a fine line, with people who seek the town of Wolsing to call home because they enjoy that rural lifestyle, while also giving people an opportunity to, it's no doubt a tough one to manage and, there is no silver bullet for that.
Yeah. Now, you know, many small towns struggle, like we hear in the Catskill struggle with a lot, is youth engagement and keeping younger residents, from moving away. You know, what is your plan for Wolsing to make Wolsing a place where young people can build their future?
You know, youth, I'm going to start even a step below before a family or looking for a job with our, you know, our middle and high schoolers. You know, I'm very excited that the town partnered with local organizations and we have a very strong application in right now, with the BRICS grant for a youth center, which is, you know, when I grew up, I had three different youth centers to go to, which, you know, gave me outs that weren't the school, but weren't home either. So I'm very excited. We'll know more about that next month, but we probably our best shot in quite some time to give our youth something to do, which, you know, obviously, you know, take that a step further now into younger people looking our way. You know, we do a great job with the village of Ellenville, with, you know, our restaurant row, with our Shadowland. The town has their trails, their hiking, their amenities, healthier lifestyle and alternatives. You know, I'm not quite sure yet as far as what that looks like for the town to attract young people and younger families to call home, but giving opportunity to everyone equitably, you know, and see how that falls when, you know, the kind of the dust settles, is better than what we're doing now.
Now, you said, like we said earlier, you are on the town board currently right now. What have you learned from your time on the town board that you like to carry over into this leadership role?
I'm very fortunate to, I'm the direct liaison with the water and wastewater departments, and there's five in total, three water districts and two wastewater districts that service the hamlets and the town of Warsing. And what I've really grown to embrace and enjoy is there are many snippets of a municipality in some ways where they each have a budget. There's unions involved. I have to talk to constituents, good, bad, or ugly. I have to report to the board, report to the supervisor. So it really has given me an advantage, whereas other departments don't have that type of exposure, given, you know, the departments just have a different type of demand. And also in my prior career, I have about a decade of hospitality management where basically every dollar that came in, I was responsible for to the bottom line. So, you know, you control your controllables, you're accountable, you know, someone calls, you answer. And I think that formula can translate into any entity and municipalities.
Now, you know, since, you know, obviously you're on the town board, like we just said, and you explained, you know, how do you plan to further foster collaboration with board members, especially when like political lines can sometimes, you know, cause divide in local government?
Yeah, that's a good question. Obviously, a couple of board members could change, you know, this after this election season. I'm fortunate with the current board. We are rather bipartisan as a whole. We don't look for, you know, what's in the best interests of certain groups or not in certain groups of people or their best interests or, you know, something they might not be against. We're very open-minded, and we do what's in the best interests of the town. For the future, you know, if in the event I get elected, you know, in that leadership role, how I envision is, you know, first and foremost, engagement with the community, getting their input, having the roundtable discussions on, again, what's working, what's not, and why. Local businessmen and businesswomen, you know, why do you invest here or why aren't you investing here? And I want the town board to be present for these because there's a lot that we don't know what we don't know. And a critical piece to our success is using the endless resource of knowledge that our town possesses, because our residents are our number one resource and our most important.
Right. And what we're seeing, like much of the Hudson Valley faces challenges like housing and mental health services. How do you see those issues connecting and how would you approach them holistically?
So I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Trudy Farber Resnick building, yes, which is next to the library. About this time last year, we found out that they were going to not only open doors, but really make an investment into each and every room just about 7 days a week. And so far, it's working out that way, where whether it's people who need certain avenues of coping mechanisms. I don't believe the mental health resource is there quite yet. We're flirting with the idea of having possibly a DMV there, which would be amazing, because one of the already challenges we see with people fully embracing the Trudy Farber Resnick building, you know, there is no one draw, where Kingston, you know, they have a draw to that building, and it is the DMV. So I think if we can get a DMV in there full time, the building would be taken much more seriously by our locals. And I think that would open doors for other services to be able to be there because they would have the business to suffice.
Yeah.
So, you know, working with our county officials, whether that's our county executive, the director of operations for the Trudy Farber Resnick building, Janet Nunez, sat in on a couple different meetings with her. She's doing a phenomenal job. You know, if elected, one of my first calls would be to her and our county executive. What can I do? What do you need from us? How can we help strengthen this and give our locals the resources they need? As much as I love our location, we're very isolated in some ways because it does take upwards of a half hour to get to certain services needed. And I think we can do better.
Yeah. Now, what are some of the challenges facing what we're seeing now? What are some, like, say, the top three things that you're sort of working on now as a town councilman?
Well, with any type of growth, you need to think about, you know, capacities, in particular with water and what you can and can't do. And, you know, there are some neighboring areas where water isn't as common as it should be. And, you know, so I think as much as I might support growth, you know, I have to be mindful of the impact it has on our most important resource. So, you know, that's it's a challenge, but I look at it as anything else. You know, it's, you know, something that we'd be mindful of. We have professionals we can deploy to do studies. We do have a couple of districts, like I said. What are the capacities? What can or can't we do? If there is a developer interested, great. You know, what is their demand versus what we can do? And that gives us, I think, a very realistic way of inviting and being inviting to growth while being mindful of our amenities, our resources, and again, also, you know, the rural lifestyle that the town of Warsing residents call home.
Right. And finally, Joseph, you know, for voters listening, why should they choose you over your incumbent? You mentioned a lot of things already, but why should they choose you when it comes on November 4th?
I think that my time spent away from the town of Warsing, seeing different landscapes down south and out west, coming back home with kind of a fresh set of eyes, right around when the pandemic hit, I have a very respectful and deep connection with the older residents, as well as, you know, coming back with that new set of eyes, I can relate to the newer residents to, you know, bounce ideas off of, which I have done and continue to do to this day. I enjoy talking to people who aren't from the town just as much as the people who are from the town of Warsing. You know, to, again, what's working, what's not, and why. You know, what attracted you to us? What didn't attract, you know, other people to us? So I think that's a critical piece to it. You know, and also my knowledge and understanding of planning and zoning, where I embrace them and I understand that they protect us, but also, you know, we have to move from some of the archaic-ish, you know, planning and old ways where technology's changed a lot, and you know, you have to update your codes every, you know, 7 to 10 years, I believe, is the rule of thumb. So, you know, and not that anything has to change necessarily, but it should be looked at because opportunity is going to keep passing us by.
We're talking to Joseph Stuckler, who's running against Terry Houck, a incumbent and Republican and conservative. He's running for town supervisor for the town of Warsing. Thank you so much for joining me on the program.
Appreciate it, Therese. Thank you.
We should note Radio Catskill reached out to incumbent supervisor Terry Houck for an interview, but did not receive a response. For all of our election coverage and all of the election resources you need for voting tomorrow, go to our website, wjffradio.org. Click on the election graphic. You'll find the Hudson Valley voting guide from our partners at the Times Union, the Pennsylvania voting guide from our partners at Spotlight PA, and personalized voting information from the League of Women Voters Education Fund's Vote 411. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll get local economic perspective from our own James B. Huntington. This is Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Catskill, keeping voters connected. Tomorrow is Election Day. In New York, polling places are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. In Pennsylvania, polling places are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The deadline to return a mail-in or absentee ballot in person in both states is the time polls close in that state. And remember, you can find all of Radio Catskill's election coverage at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill.
This week on the Retro Cocktail Hour, we've got Jungle Jazz by Xavier Cugat and Modesto Duran. Steve Allen plays hi-fi music for Influentials. And Mamie Eisenhower's favorite band, The Three Sons. I'm Darryl Brogdon. Join me where the music is shaken, not stirred. The Retro Cocktail Hour. Wednesday night at 7, here on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Time for some economic news. From our local economist and author, our own James B. Huntington. James B., happy Monday.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
Well, it seems like we're talking about interest rates a lot. What happened with interest rates last week?
They went down the same amount that they did in the previous month, a quarter of a percent. It was not unexpected. It was not as much of a lock as it was the previous time. And next month, they won't really know. The comments here are that interest rates are now below 4% for the first time since late 2022, about 3 months now, well, 3 years now, rather. And the Federal Reserve is having problems figuring out what to do because not all the information that's usually out there is available. We don't know anything about employment. We know that inflation has been creeping up. They still decided to lower it. There was a feeling they had that they were a little bit high, the interest rate. So now we don't know, and I expect that they will be able to look at more data by the time they meet next month. If they don't, I don't think they have much business lowering rates again, that everything should just stay the same as... Actually, Fed Chair Powell said, what do you do if you're driving in the fog? You slow down. Mm. So he's sort of dropping a hint there that in the absence of data, interest rates aren't going to change.
So how does this rate cut affect listeners' finances? What does it mean?
Different areas are affected in different ways. First, we have auto rates. They've been largely stable, but they're remaining on the high side, and new car prices may outweigh any difference in interest rates, any small cut there may be in the percentage that car loans pay. But they've been 7% lately on new cars, at least according to September, and 10.7% for used cars. So with the tariffs, car prices are going up considerably, so overall don't expect to pay less money if you're going to get a car loan, really. Credit cards may go down a little bit. They're already way high. It's something important they mention in this piece here is that if you are stuck with carrying over balances and paying interest on them, talk to your credit card issuer and they may be able to reduce it or get you a better rate on based on what other companies and so on have advertised. That's a real possibility there. Then mortgages, they don't usually move along with the Fed's benchmark rate, but they usually stay with 10-year treasury bonds, which go up and down for different matters. They have been creeping down 6.19% average for a 30-year fixed, according to October 23rd. So they may go down a little bit more, not a great deal, probably not as much as 0.25 of a percent, which the things went down. Savings accounts and CDs are supposed to go down. They rather consistently do when the Fed's interest rate drops, but there are people out there, or especially online banks, if you have any taste for that, that may be able to get you a higher rate that doesn't respond quite so much to what's happening with the benchmark interest rate here. Student loans, they dropped for the first time in 5 years for money borrowed. They have a long period of time here of money borrowed really from July through June, starting this past June or this past July. Now they're 6.39% for undergraduate loans. So they are going down. We may see some real improvement now. Be warned there that many banks and credit unions want nothing to do with student loans. So you may need to shop around and find a lender who specializes in them. You may be able to get that easier and probably at a better rate.
Now, the government shutdown is poised to become the longest ever this week as the impasse between Democrats and Republicans has dragged into a new month. We've heard about millions standing to lose their food aid benefits, the health care subsidies that are set to expire. There aren't any real talks between these parties about over how to end it. So what impact might this have to the economy? What might the economy lose during this standoff?
Well, I don't know about the food stamps, because that has been ruled that they have to continue giving them, but it is being fought out still in court, and the delay is not good for people who aren't getting them. Overall, the economy may lose up to $14 billion because of the shutdown as it is now. It's going to delay federal spending. It'll have a negative effect that the economy, that not all of which will reverse once the shutdown is over. It may be a lower GDP, gross domestic product, in the fourth quarter than they would have thought otherwise. So what we have, they figured out, or as the people writing this article, the Congressional Budget Office said that the six-week shutdown would bring growth down to 1.5%, down 1.5% from expected otherwise, 8 weeks, 2%. And it gets worse from there. So we don't really have any estimated time, but you're right about the days. Today is 33, and the all-time record, which was in 2010, was 35 days. So we're going to blow right past that on Wednesday, it certainly looks like. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any real indication. I mean, we are hearing some noises from the Oval Office and other things, some real or insincere ways of saying they want this to end, but the parties have a lot of different considerations and different agendas connected with this, so I wouldn't count on this ending. I think it's a big underdog to end this week. It's the last I saw in the prediction markets, the over-under for the time it would end would be about November 15th, and today, well, that would be 12 days out in the future. That may have changed. It probably will change once we get past the 35 days, go even longer. But you never know. I mean, mm-hmm. We may read that they've all sprung to action and are working around the clock to get this thing over with. I hope so. It's really gone a long time, and it's having much more of an effect on people than the previous ones, where everybody knew they were going to get back pay or back benefits or whatever. Now even that's really right up in the air.
And we've seen a lot of employers putting their workers on notice, some layoffs hitting big companies like Amazon, Target, UPS, and others. Some of them laid off, some folks getting offers of buyouts. But why should you think twice about a buyout offer from your employer?
A couple things are working here. First of all, a goodly number of companies are offering buyouts before they are going to have layoffs. If they don't get enough people taking the buyout, they may have layoffs, and the concerns or the terms involved here may be better. You have to look at how big is the severance package and how much do you want to leave the job. If possible, sniff around and see what other opportunities there might be and whether you get responses if you apply for them. They're better off. We hope that employers are giving more time, maybe even as long as 90 days, for people to decide on these things. They can get more information. You can actually ask, just straight out, flat out ask human resources to improve your package. But the thing there is, don't ask for a buyout if you aren't ready to take one. So mm-hmm. You'd better to be out of there if they meet your terms and do that. So negotiation on that sort of thing is completely fair and acceptable, and so is hiring an attorney to represent you if you're really not happy with what might happen otherwise. It's like some people will say that's not really acceptable or it's not polite or whatever, but you really have to defend yourself with these things. And, you know, buyout might be a very good thing for you, but think twice before grabbing the first one they offer.
All right, let's look at the numbers. How did things change this morning, and how do they change over week to week? Oil stocks.
As of early this morning, gold was $4,002 an ounce. That's down 37. It's a little bit down, but it seems to be hanging around 4,000 lately. So I know we saw 43 or something, but it may be taking pause. There has been a lot of profit taking. There will be more. It's hard to resist. This stuff was $1,000 less earlier in the year. It's really tempting. Silver, 48.55, up 74 cents. The ratio there is a little over 82 to 1. Silver is also recovering and finding a new floor before it goes on to somewhere. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 47.563. All these things are early this morning. Plus 356 over the week. Still going up, still getting new highs. Same thing goes for NASDAQ. 23,775 up 520, which is about 2.5 times the percentage gain the Dow had, just going up and up. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 60.95, the 42-gallon barrel. It's up 4 cents, so it was really a slow week. It's staying neutral, not a lot of big changes in expected business. We read about OPEC Plus saying they would increase production next month, but that may have canceled out some of its oil's tendency to go up and not done much else. Bitcoin, 107,094 for down 881. And the roller coaster goes down. British pound, 1.3124, down 2 cents. It's quite a big loss. Surprising that with our interest rate cut, because that... usually when interest rates go up here, that means big foreign currencies go down. So people move their money into dollars. Euro, 1.1512, down 1.19 cents. Similar, but not as much. And the Japanese 100 yen coin still at 65 cents, reaching a new level. It's just not a lot of activity there. It's not, I don't think it's as strong and formidable a currency as it was in decades past. Overall, well, stocks get the prize this week. There's still tons of money out there. We should not be terrified if we do get a correction, or not even a correction, if we do just get some profit taking in the stock markets and these things drop 1,000 or so. We're still way higher than we were earlier this year, so there's a lot to play with.
All right. James B. Huntington is our local author and economist, joins us every Monday with some local economic perspective. James B., thanks so much. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, the River Vibes concert series returns to the Cooperage in Honesdale. We'll meet the two artists sharing the bill next. This is Radio Chatskill.
Have you ever watched someone make a mistake over and over again until you finally step in to correct them, and then it just makes everything worse?
When you try to motivate people to do things that they struggle to do, you know, you also send them the not-so-subtle message that you don't think they're trying hard enough.
How to effectively help the people we love. This week on Hidden Brain from NPR. Today at 2 on Radio Catskill.
The need is growing. More families in our community are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are on the front lines, but they need help. You can make a difference by donating non-perishable food, personal care items, and baby supplies, or by volunteering to support and distribute these donations. It's about nourishing our neighbors. Visit WJFFradio.org for info to help ensure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
New peanut allergies are way down in the United States. That's due in part to a remarkable 180 doctors made in 2015, encouraging parents to introduce peanuts to their infants early rather than waiting until they're a year or two old. Such a simple change, but too long in coming. Public health has some lessons to learn here about how to avoid being caught up in emotions and trends that could hurt more than they help. That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Sunday, the Cooperage in Honesdale welcomes the River Vibes concert series with Connor Garvey bringing his heartfelt storytelling and uplifting melodies, and joined by Shanna in a Dress, quirky, bold, mixing clever humor with some heartfelt songs. Here's a little bit of Connor and All These Things.
Thanks for coming on a busy day. I know your life is full.
We've got Connor Garvey and Shanna in a Dress both joining us live on the phone. Hi, guys. Good. How are you?
Hey.
Hey, Connor, I'm going to start with you since we were just listening to some of your music, and Shanna, we'll hear some of yours a little later too. But Connor, your songs are known for some storytelling that resonates deeply. What inspires your writing most of these days?
Oh my gosh, we're pulling from a pretty fruitful tapestry out there in the world. But yeah, I love starting from a place of wonder and of awe, and so right now I'm feeling like I'm drawn towards a lot of songs that are being inspired by the natural world as a place of going for restoration and inspiration. And but yeah, in general, it's a gift to be able to spend time reflecting and then bringing it out into song. So each song has its own, I guess, unique journey. But start from a place of awe, and sometimes that is like awe-inspiring, where you're just blown away by the beauty of something, or sometimes awe is like, I cannot believe that we are experiencing the world like this. And so whether we're going in a positive direction or one of, challenge, awe.
And Shanna, you mix some of that awe with humor and heart and clever wordplay. How do you balance all those elements on stage live?
Oh my gosh, what a fantastic question. I think I just see the world as a big joke, so it's easy to, like, there's like the fact that we're all going to die is hilarious to me. And, you know, I woke up today, it's a Monday morning, and I had that, like, I'm behind already, like, heaviness in my body, and just remembering, like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it matters, like, none of this matters. And that is what helps me bring lightness into all of the, you know, supposed turmoil that we create for ourselves.
You guys are both returning to the Cooperage Project. What's it playing in an intimate venue like that? What makes it special, Connor?
Oh man, I love that venue. It's been a while since I've been there, so I'm excited to get back. The intimate show experience is the one I crave the most. And so to be able to share your songs with people who really listen and lean in and engage with it. I guess that's the real payoff, and the financial side is what just gives it gas to keep going. I'm just really, really excited to get back to that space and be able to fill it with some stories and song. And Shanna, I'm excited to do the show with you. It's going to be great.
Shanna, mm-hmm. Do you feel like an intimate venue helps with your mix of, you know, laughter and vulnerability?
Oh my gosh, yes. Like, I think intimate venues are supreme, even though my ego might want to be selling out stadiums like Taylor Swift. Like, this is the cream of the crop, because I love connecting with the audience, like being able to talk to them in the middle of a set. And I'm so excited for this particular show because Connor really does, like, create magic when he sings his songs. And the last time I heard him perform, it blew my heart open and it blew me away. So to get to share, like, a great venue with such a great artist, like, really excites me.
And Shanna, your new album, Sweet Spot, is coming out soon. What themes or stories should fans expect?
Ooh, don't expect anything so I can surprise you. But I think, yeah, my how do I hold my perspective on the world of how do I hold things that used to be hard in a way that really delights me. Like the opening line of the Sweet Spot song, like the thing that I think used to weigh me down the most was like, I'm not attractive enough to be successful in the world. And especially as a musician. And like, I had this lightning strike one day where I was like, you know what? I'm pretty enough. I'm pretty enough for boys to like me, but not pretty enough for girls to hate me. It's like I'm in the sweet spot. And that became the opening lyric and like the whole philosophy for the song.
Connor, talk about your latest album, Another End of the Year. And you're addressing some personal and universal themes in that album. Talk a little bit about Another End of the Year.
Yeah, well, thank you. First off, Shanna, thanks for the compliment. It's so reciprocated. So Another End of the Year came out in 22, but it was really a project for like the 6 years leading up to it with the writing and exploring what it meant to be bringing kids into the world and pandemic. And there's a lot of instability that went into that record. And a lot of what we were exploring was kind of the depth that the human experience can get to with loss and with celebration. But I'm also like bringing a different batch of songs as well that we're releasing right now. We're just about to put out our third single from a new project that I'm releasing with a band here in Portland called The Finest Kind Band, which is brings a lot more levity, if I'm being honest, than the Another End of a Year record. And so I'm balancing out. I feel like after that last record came out, which has plenty of toe tappers, and if you're just taking it at like listening in the car and thinking about other things, it might not be as deep of an impact. But I feel like those songs are pretty heavy for me. And so this new project has a lot with climate change and difficulties that we're going through the world, but on the whole, I think it brings back a little bit of hope that I think is part of my core that I feel like I maybe have been drifting a little bit away from. A whole balance. The human condition will be well addressed between Shanna and I.
Yeah, I think. Well, and maybe Shanna will help lift. Make it a little lighter for you while you're there, as well. And she's often described as, I have to get this in here, your quirky best friend who refuses to wear pants. That's a quote.
It's true.
All right. Well, both of these guys, Connor Garvey and Shanna Inadress, will be at the Cooperage in Honesdale this Sunday as part of River Vibes concert series. You can find more at thecooperageproject.org for ticket information there. And also you can find out more about each of them at their respective websites, ConnorGarveySongs.com and ShannaInAdress.com. Shanna, we're going to go out on Rope to My Heart. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you. Amazing. Thanks for having
thank
us
you.
On.
Great question.
Somehow you wrapped me round your finger that beckoned me closer from across the room. But before you think I'm the kind who will linger, let me explain something to you. I flutter and I float and then I flit away. I'm a butterfly. I like to land on noses and hands just to watch people smile.
Shanna Inadress with Rope to My Heart. Thanks to both of them for joining us. Thank you for listening as well. Remember, tomorrow, Election Day, don't forget to vote. And you can find all the voting resources at our website, wjffradio.org. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.
Support comes from Catskills Property Care, offering full property care year-round for commercial and residential properties in Sullivan County, including snow plowing, landscaping, property checkups, and more. Information at CatskillsPropertyCare.com. And from the Calicoon Theater, an updated vintage movie theater with new film releases, live music, and more. CalicoonTheater.com. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFRadio.org. This is Radio Catskill, keeping voters connected. Tomorrow is Election Day. In New York, polling places are open from 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. In Pennsylvania, polling places are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. The deadline to return a mail-in or absentee ballot in person in both states is the time polls close in that state. And remember, you can find all of Radio Catskill's election coverage at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at wjffradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. An afternoon shower or two possible with a high of 54. Breezy shower this evening, possible low 38. And tomorrow, windy, high 51. On Point is next. It's 11 o'clock.